Yes, better together. How to have better relationships. And all of you want that. You would like a better relationship with your significant other. You would like to be able to move into, if you're not married, to move into a relationship with someone that is something that you're proud of and that you're excited about. And you want to look back on and go, wow, this was terrific. Someone asked, what's the secret of a good marriage? And said, well, we take time to go to a restaurant and two times a week, a little candlelight, a little dinner, some soft music, and some dancing. And she goes on Tuesdays, and I go on Thursday. So I had to get that joke in before she stopped me.
Oh, right? It was awesome.
Sandy and I met on a blind date, if you can imagine that. My brother set us up, and we go out, and I saw her and went, whoa, I am way in over my head. What do I do? So I did all the best things that I could do, man. I was a perfect gentleman. We ended up going to a grocery store where we bought some stuff. We were going to make some hot fudge sundaes back at her place. And in the produce department, I started juggling fruit. And she, you know, it was just amazing. She was just watching this guy and going, whoa. Our second date, we went skiing, snow skiing. She's a skier. I said, oh, hey, I can ski. This is great. And remember, she is so hot. She's just awesome, beautiful smile, big brown eyes, and I'm just done, right? So we're coming down Stevens Pass on one of the slopes there, and maybe Big Chief or Tall Chief or whatever it's called, and the lift stops. And we're waiting. It's kind of getting, you know, it's kind of nice because those lifts back then, they were really close, right? So here I am, second date, and I'm sitting real close. But we're stopped there, and I thought, man, what can I do to impress her? And I look down, and it's only about 20 feet to the snow. She's going to be impressed, isn't she, guys? So I said, hey, I'll meet you at the bottom. And I take a gainer off of that thing, hit the snow. I didn't fall and skied down. And what did you say?
I said, that was stupid.
I didn't hear that part, right? So I thought, man, I'm winning this game. And third date, I take her to a concert. And we have an awesome concert. Fourth date, I took her to dinner. And it was a place called Charlie's in Bellevue. Used to be there, and Charlie's in Bellevue. If you grew up here, you know the place. And again, wonderful dinner. And on the fifth date, guys, I kissed her goodnight. I was done. Wow, she let me kiss her. This is just off the charts, right? So for the next few months, man, I'm doing everything I can to make sure that I get her to say what? Yes. Yes. Right? And I did all I could, and it worked. Jumping off the ski lift, the dinners, the romance, whatever it was, it worked. And she said yes. And I knew, man, I wanted to be married to this awesome, kind, generous, forgiving individual who saw something in me that I didn't even see in myself, who talked to me every day about, wow, the great things that she saw that God was going to do in my life. I remember just her encouragement. And, you know, really, what was the thing that attracted me to you? You to me.
I think it was very specifically that I finally met someone that had more passion, I thought had more passion for Christ than I did. I had grown up in church. I had a sense of God's calling on my life. I had a sense of, you know, wanting to serve God in everything that I did. And Charlie, you know, was on target. Here's what I'm going to do. This is what I want to do for God. And no dream was too big.
And many of the guys
him.
You had dated talk about God, but yeah, it was kind of a show, right?
Right. And
So that was a huge thing. She says yes. And about, studies show that after about 5 years, all that dopamine, all that charge, all that fizz, all that energy, all that stuff in there begins to taper off. 5 years. About 2 years after that, you get that, what do you call it, the seven-year itch, right? Because now the joy, the fun, the excitement of marriage is gone. It took us about what?
5 months. Yeah. Ours tapered. Ours was more of a downhill slide right from the get-go.
5 months. We moved all the way across the country to Texas.
We had
a
lot
of family,
stressors.
All the stuff. But 5 months. And here's what she saw. All this passion I had for God, for church, for all, I mean, for Jesus, was really misplaced.
Yeah.
My insecurity was so strong that I felt like I had to make a name for myself. I had to be great at everything that I did. I had to let people see who I was and affirm me and build me up. And so in that, it was directed toward church and church work. And mm-hmm. I appreciated her after the marriage for all the stuff that she did for me to make my career better.
Yeah.
Not my love for Christ, not my relationship with Jesus, but what I could do to make myself look better. And she looked so great, so I loved having her around. She's like, oh, you only want me around because...
felt very used and taken for granted and taken advantage of, because all of a sudden I could see that I was just a tool to further his dream. I wasn't a partner.
We are emotionally, physically, and even spiritually attracted to other people because of the things that we do. Because of the things we do. Think about it. There's 7 billion people in the world, and there's a person for you. When you get married, if you're not married, or if you are married, you said, hey, this is the person that I want for the rest of my life, this one person. And unless you're in some other religion or something, we stick to one person, right? This is it. She's the one. He's the one. Because of things that you did. In the marriage.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we go ahead and stop doing them after the marriage. So all the things we did to gain that person's agreement to marry us, gain that person's trust, gain that person's affection, we go, got it now, we're married, and we stop doing those very things that build our relationships.
Guys are generally goal-oriented, right? They see a goal, they want to accomplish a goal, man, I've done it. And we treat dating and engagement like we treat hunting. Any hunters here? Hunters, I was a hunter growing up, and you spend thousands of dollars on the right equipment. You know, you get just the right stuff. Oh, man, I spent a lot of money on Sandy. I didn't have a lot, but for me, it was a lot of money. I just spent it on her. Oh, man, a lot of money. We put on musk so the deer will smell us just right. We put on the right cologne so that they...
So they won't smell you.
Well, they'll smell, yeah. We camouflage our face. We try to make ourselves just look just right. And then all of a sudden we see it there and we're really careful. And boom! Tag it, bag it, take it home, put it in the freezer. Okay, that one's done. What's the next deer I'm going to get? Right? What's the next accomplishment I'm going to get? Mm-hmm. And for 5 years, again, this typical statistic, 5 years in a relationship, the wife is thinking, hey, we've got a great marriage. All that stuff that you did is going to continue. All that stuff is really part of who you are and what you mm-hmm. are. And so she's trying to do all the things that keep a great marriage together, and what she sees in her mind is a great marriage. We're sending birthday cards and we're spending time together. And she's trying really, really hard to put up this ideal of a marriage. And the guy is not. He's done, man. He's okay. It's great. We're married. And after about 5 years, she gets worn out, and she gets tired. She goes, I'm doing this all alone. I'm the only one really engaged in this relationship. And so you begin to see this thing pair off, and she starts to resent it. And in our relationship, it happened fairly quickly because Sandy could see right through me. Everybody else saw, oh, it's Pastor Charlie. Oh, he's wonderful. And she said, this guy is a tool. Marriage is...
I don't know if I said that. I think I said things like, you don't live with him. So.
Someone said marriage is a 3-ring circus. Engagement ring, wedding ring, and suffering. That's another one I slid in there. Better Homes and Garden did a survey.
Fantastic.
Better Homes and Garden did a survey asking the question, what makes marriages fail? Right? What makes marriages fail? 300,000 respondents. 300,000 people wrote back. Number one response was immaturity. Immaturity. Number two response was selfishness. Immaturity and selfishness. And we hear it all the time. We're just incompatible. Mm-hmm. Right? We married the wrong person. What that is telling me is there are two people who are terribly selfish. Terribly selfish. And they're too stubborn, right? Too immature to make adjustments. A lot of times it's this immaturity is I just don't know what to do. And I think I'm doing all the right stuff, but I'm too immature, too selfish to actually grow and figure it out. Galatians 5. Now I've changed the words. I've left the original writing, but don't accuse me of jacking up scripture, but just go with it, all right? Galatians 5. Paul writes this. He says, my friends, You were chosen. You chose, my friends, you chose to be free, to be married. No one forced you to marry. It wasn't a shotgun. It's a free choice on your part to be married. So don't use your freedom, don't use your marriage as an excuse to do anything you want. Hey, now I'm married. Ha, great. I can do anything I want. Oh, I don't have to court anymore. I don't have to do all the stuff I did before. I don't have to do the stuff that attracted her to me. I'm free. Now I'm married. This is great. He says, but instead, use it as an opportunity to serve each other with love. Boy, you're married now. Now make this thing a loving deal. Use this as an opportunity that now you don't have to split up and go home to your own places and date and all this. No, you're together. Use this as an opportunity to show love. All the law says can be summed up in this command. People go, the Bible's really complicated. Man, it's such a big book, a lot of words in it. It's really complicated. Paul goes, the whole Bible can be summed up in this word right here. Love others. Love your wife. Love your husband. Whole Bible's that. Just love other people as much as you love yourself. Remember that selfishness thing? Oh, it's all about me. It's all about me. No. No, love her as much as you love you. And then he gives a warning. But if you keep attacking each other, right, like a jerk or wild animals, I'm sorry, you had better watch out because you're going to destroy your relationship. It's not going to go. Romans 12:16 says, live in harmony with each other. Some of you this morning, you're anything but harmony. It's disharmony. Maybe you're on that tail end spot where Sandy and I were for so long. Make every effort to do what leads to mutual edification. I want her to edify me. How come he? Why doesn't she? What's going on here? And we forget about this thing that says, whoa, 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 wait a minute. Mutual edification.
Someone has to start.
Yeah. And here's the thing, that immaturity, you have to know what the other person needs. Mm-hmm. I don't know how we intuitively did it before we got married, but after married, we forget. What? I don't know. What's wrong with her? Something's broken in her because I'm doing all the stuff, man. I'm paying the bills. I'm taking care of the cars. I'm, you know, making sure that things get taken care of, and she doesn't even appreciate it. You ever ask your kids to clean their room and they mow the lawn instead? But Dad, I mowed the lawn. I care about the lawn. I want you to clean your room. How many times in your relationship you are cleaning your room and not mowing the lawn, or mowing the lawn and not cleaning your room, and you're going, why am I getting any points for this? How come she doesn't see? How come he doesn't see all the things I'm doing? Well, the thing doesn't matter. Sandy and I have been teaching from this book, His Needs, Her Needs, for a long time, by Willard Harley. If you want to write it down, His Needs, Her Needs, you can bing it and it'll pop right up. But His Needs, Her Needs. And we love this teaching. This week and next week. Ladies, this is your week. Guys, get your wives here next week. Next week is going to be for you. But the million dollar question. What are your needs? See, we forget to ask the million dollar question. We only think that, hey, she must have the same needs I have. She must have the same, because they're good for me, so they must be good for her. I like mowing the lawn. Why doesn't she like mowing the lawn?
And I think Harley actually asked the question, how would you like your spouse to care for you? Okay, so right now, Charlie is picking up these papers. Seriously, he knows that's going to drive me crazy. That would not drive him crazy at all, and he knew that. Thank you. That is caring for me.
If you've been at Church on the Ridge for any length of time, you've heard us tell this story, but we got married 35 years ago. And remember,
we're just going to tidy them up right here.
We do things that in our dating that we don't do after we get married. We forget. We just, you know, and sometimes we mislead and do things that, oh man, I want to make sure I get this person to say yes. So as a wedding gift, I've climbed Mount Rainier. I've summited Mount Rainier. I've climbed Mount Adams. In fact, Arnie's taken me up to the top of it. God bless you, brother. And done the enchantments. I love hiking, love being outside, love doing hunting stuff. And Sandy's going, oh, yeah, I love that stuff too. Oh, yeah.
That's I like so hiking. I like outside.
Yeah, but she just has to get back to a bathroom and a holiday, you know,
decent hotel.
Camping is a Holiday Inn. But, yeah, decent hotel, whatever. So I'm out, you know. So for a wedding gift, I bought her some of the finest pair of Danner hiking boots that were available, $125 in 1984. Sweet boots. And I thought, oh, this is going to be such a blessing to her. Her feet are not going to hurt. She won't get blisters. She'll be able to do the rock climbing stuff that we do, and it's going to be awesome. And in 35 years, how many times have you worn these?
Twice.
Once when she tried them on, and the second time in the garden.
Yes.
In fact,
the soles are totally intact.
Yeah, they're brand new. They've been worn twice. In fact, I had to pull them out of the garbage.
I threw them away.
She threw them away, and
she surprised me.
That was our wedding gift. How can you throw them? And I keep this hope that someday, 35 years, right? What were her needs? What were the things that she really wanted? What were the things that drove her? I was only thinking about the things that drove me, and I totally miss it. Right? So I wasted, again, in 1984, $120 was a lot for me. I was making $50 a week, and so it was a big deal. But I was only thinking about, oh, this is going to be good for me, not good for her. The $1 million question, how can I care for you? How can I meet your needs?
And that word care is an interesting one. We kind of overlook it. It's this little word, I don't care, handle with care.
Could care less.
We don't think about this word care. And if you look up the word care, in healthcare, we care, right? Health care. Interesting. And so that word care is maybe a little more meaningful for me, because what does that really mean, to care for your patient? And when you look at it, it's really a profound word, because it talks a lot about saying, I need to meet your need. It's an action word. It is a verb. It isn't talking about, oh, you know, just this idea. It's not even stopping at empathy, which is saying, I'm going to put myself in your shoes. It's now taking the next step to do something about it. So it's really a progression where you find out what does the other person truly need and want. And then saying, I feel enough for you. I love you enough to feel that and now do something to help that out.
That's really good.
What care means.
So second slide, please. Your marriage vows, right, included this promise that you were going to care for the other person. And there is an expectation on their part. You go into this marriage thinking, hey, she's going to care for me. He's going to care for me. Mm-hmm. He's going to meet my needs. He's going to pour into me. He's going to be there for me. There's that expectation. And when you said that at the altar, you said, yes, I'm going to do that. So now it's in both your minds. The problem is we don't know what those needs are. We fill in the blank with the stuff that we think that they need. A pair of hiking boots. That's what she is going to really, wow! Your commitment to the marriage of caring for each other. The best way to meet each other's, to care for each other, is to meet their basic foundational emotional needs. Go and go to the next slide. Oh, there's a right way and a wrong way to care for each other. And then we talked about that. The best way to do it is to meet their basic emotional foundational needs. We call them basic. We call them foundational, not because they're just simple, but because they absolutely are essential. The basic needs to care for the other person. The best way is to meet their foundational emotional needs. And Sandy and I are different.
And so we have to identify what are the needs of the other person in the relationship so we can meet them.
And most people who get married are different.
Yes.
They are, Sandy and I, you cannot be more different than us. We've encouraged you all through this Better Together series that if you are in a rocky place, there is hope for you and there is help for you. You will not find two more opposite people in any personality profile that you do. I pulled this one out that we did about 20 years ago.
Oops.
And again, sorry, sweetie. About 20 years ago. And just laugh. Things just don't change. It's what we were dealing with 20 years ago, the same stuff we're dealing with today. Our differences. She's never going to change into something that's going to be, hey, a hunter, wow. I'm never going to change into, you know, the things that she looks for. But it doesn't mean I cannot meet her needs. And because we've been successful now, these last 27 years, been successful in our relationship, is because of this very thing. And we want to help you this morning. We want to help you next week. So if you're here today, do not miss next week. There are 5 basic needs of a man and 5 basic needs of a woman.
And sometimes they overlap, and yours might not be the exact, but there's these 10 basic needs. Most often, in most cases, these ones are the ones that are attributed to women.
Yeah, and if your needs are different, you go, oh, hey, that's one of my basic needs. Great. We're going to talk about how you communicate that in a little bit. But before we jump into the five basic needs of a woman, how many of you can guess what the number one basic need of a man is? Food. More than food, brother. Whoever said that, sister, I don't know who said it, but it's bigger than food. Oh, respect's a good one, but it's bigger than that. Sexual fulfillment. Sexual fulfillment. Ask 100 guys, 80 of them will put that as their number one. And there's a lot wrapped into that because these needs are all interrelated. It's hard to be able to have one without doing the other. In fact, it's almost impossible. And the first need we're going to talk about for a woman, write this down, guys, is communication. Ladies, you don't have to take notes because you already know this stuff. But and these are not in order, okay? These are not in order. Your order is going to be different than Sandy's order, than my order is going to be. And maybe you go, yeah, sex is not number one for me. It's down here. Or communication is not number one. It doesn't matter. These are just the five basic needs, and you will prioritize them. Again, it's part of the homework when we get to the end. Communication. Conversation. Conversation. What in the world is the deal with women wanting to talk all the time? Seriously. Philippians 2:4 says, don't just think about your own affairs. You ever go on a date and the person, the other person just talked all about themselves? Yes. That's not conversation. That's not communication. Right? That's boring. Right? Begin to ask them questions and get them involved, but be interested in others and what they are doing. The experts say that meaningful time together, meaningful conversation, 15 hours a week.
That's a lot.
15 hours a week of meaningful conversation.
And that's really hard with kids.
Yeah. Do you think Russell Wilson practices 15 hours a week? I bet he does. You're going to get to the top of your game. You're going to have to put in some time. I would venture to guess that most of you spend less than 2 hours a week of meaningful conversation. Stuff we talked about a few weeks ago, not just the surface stuff, but actually engaging together. To talk with Sandy. You know, guys, we think this is so hard, such a beating. But what it means, meaningful conversation, good communication, is when I stop, I put down my phone, step away from the computer, turn off the TV, put down the newspaper, whatever it is, and I look her in the eye, right?
It's like your kids, you know, yeah, 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 and then they'll just grab your face. No, look at me.
Look at me, right? My wife wants me to look at her. Look at her in the eyes and be engaged. And she will ask me when I get home from work or she comes in the door, you'll ask me.
How was your day?
And what will I say, guys? Yeah.
Next. How was your day?
Fine.
What happened?
I worked.
Any details?
Yeah, it was good. What is she looking for? Conversation. So I learned, I may have shared this with you before, but I learned before I get home, I will stop, you know, about a block away, and I'll write down 3 things that happened at work that day. I go, okay, Siri came in and she told me that somebody can't make the appointment and, you know, it's going to jack up my calendar for next week. This lady called and wanted us to give her $10,000 and it seemed like a big scam, and so I didn't take the call. And
So. Oh, you wouldn't believe the scams.
Life of a pastor.
Interesting.
Right? And Pastor Kevin came in, and he had some harebrained idea about having Sunday school on the roof of the church, and I told him, go for it. Sounds like a great idea. All right. Love that guy. And so anyway, so I come in, and she goes,
hi, how was your day?
Oh, man, you know, Siri came into my office, and she told me that somebody couldn't make the appointment, and so it jacked up my whole calendar, so I got to figure that out.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That is so unfortunate.
And this lady called. You wouldn't believe it. She's won $10,000, and it's a big scam. And by the time I get to there,
I just take over.
And then I only have to know 5 phrases, right?
Do you want to hear?
Wow. Oh. Oh, I'm sorry. Unbelievable. Did you guys get them? I'm sorry. Unbelievable. Those 5 phrases, and she will talk for an hour. And I just sit there, wow, right? And what does that do? It's meeting her need. I'm engaged with her. I'm looking at her. I'm showing concern and empathy. And she's like going, oh, he loves me. He loves me. As opposed to,
okay, sure.
Well, did you even hear a word I said? Yeah, you said fish for dinner. Right? He doesn't love me. He doesn't care about me. Guys, if you're going to fill your wife's love tank, you've got to communicate. You've got to have meaningful conversation. Action item. Try to take one day this week and turn off all electronics, right? Put down TV, cell phone, don't watch a movie. And if you have kids at home, try this with the kids. Kids, know this is the one day we are not doing any electronics, and they will have some convulsions going into withdrawals and the whole thing, and you will have rioting at the gates, you know, storming the Bastille, but just dads.
But it's so good for them because, you know, the studies that are coming out now indicating how conversation is such a challenge for kids, and even as they're coming into the workforce, and they can't even stand an interview because they do not know how to converse with other adults.
And that's part of the deal too. If you got young kids at home, right? Remember when the kids were little? And
oh yeah. It was just so good to talk to an adult on those days. It's like I was a better mom when I worked, and because that whole adult conversation was important to me, and we weren't in a great place, so it was like, whoa. And that was what happened in our marriage, is I went ahead and I met my need in a way that I shouldn't have met it. And so I had my friends at work, and that's who I'd talk things through with, because he wasn't talking to me.
And they'll spend
anything.
Hours talking to their girlfriend on the phone, when what a miss that is for your relationship. Number two, we got to move on. Openness and honesty. Guys, we've got to be open and honest. This is part of that communication. You can see this all goes together. She asked me how I'm doing, and I say, fine. Yeah, I know I feel fine, but that's not really how I'm doing.
Right?
Had someone come in my office and rip me a new one and told me I wasn't meeting my numbers, and if I didn't meet my numbers and do something better, and I don't want to share that. It's too painful. And she's like going, she finds out 2 weeks later that, hey, my job's on the line. She's like, how come he hasn't been telling me? He's not being honest with me. How come he's not sharing this stuff? What else is he not being honest about? What are the other things he's hiding? Hey, was he being serious when he stood at the altar and said all those words? Is he really being truthful about that? Ephesians 4 says, therefore, each of you must put off falsehood, speak truthfully to their neighbor, your wife, for we are members of one body. We're connected. 100% honesty. If you struggle with secrets, being fully disclosing to your wife, being open, right? You're going to be a statistic.
Yeah, honesty is huge for women, because when you find out that there was a half-truth or a holdback of truth, you find about it later, then women start thinking, what else are they lying about? What else am I not in the know about? And that is a big deal, because it breaks trust. And there's such a difference between forgiveness and rebuilding trust and giving trust. And what we all need to realize, but is that when trust is broken, I can 100% forgive Charlie, but that doesn't mean that the trust is back. And so every time there's that lie, there's that little mistruth. I misspoke. I love that. No, you lied. You know. Anyway, and then trust is broken, and trust takes a lot of energy to build, and it is a brick by brick experience. So 100% forgiveness, but it doesn't mean that trust has to come right along with that. And so those lies, that honesty is so important.
Goes right back to meaningful conversation and communication. How are you? You say fine. To her, that's a lie. That to her, you're holding something back. To her, you're not revealing your true self.
Yeah, I should be the safe person that you can really be open with.
So, action item. Share one feeling with her this week. Oh, guys, you may have to stop and think about it, because we kind of put our feelings away. But what am I really feeling? You know what? I'm ticked off about the way things are going in this area. You know what? I'm frustrated. You know, I got really excited about this that happened. Share one thing where you open up your heart. Watch how it works. Number three, financial security. This is pretty powerful language the Apostle Paul writes in, to the pastor Timothy. He says, Timothy, he says, listen to me. If anyone does not provide for his own, those in his own household, right, his spouse, he has denied the faith, denied that he's even a follower of Christ, and he's worse than an unbeliever. That's quite a big rebuke. If you don't provide for your family, it's like an unbeliever. In Thessalonians, he wrote to the Thessalonians, he says, we also gave you this rule. Here's a rule now. Here's a command. If you don't work, you don't eat. Somebody said food was like number one. it's this whole idea that I'm going to make sure that we are financially taken care of to the best of my ability. I'm not going to overspend. I'm not going to be frivolous with the resources. I'm going to make sure that our finances are in a good place, and we're going to, you know, we're going to live in a way that we've agreed upon living. In 2 weeks, not next week, we're going to talk about men's needs, but in 2 weeks, we're going to talk about money and marriage. Number one fights in marriage is about money. And number one reason we fight about money is because we don't communicate about it. So we're going to talk about how to do that in a couple of weeks. But you got to pay your bills, take care of your spouse. So an action item this week, set a budget. A what? Google it. Set a budget.
It's an old word.
Yes, set a budget. Just at least look it up. At least start the process of going, all right, well, how to...
It was so interesting this week. We had a conversation with a couple that is senior to us and have been married longer than us, and they were fighting about a purchase of home electronics. And you're just like going, really?
You figured it out by now.
Yeah. That should have been a decision that you made together, and here it was, the whole, and she never lets me buy anything, and he went off and bought it, and you're going, oh my goodness. So don't let that be you.
Number four.
Children and parenting. And this is huge. Women want their husbands to be the dad. They want them to participate, not just fun dad, yeah, let's go off the roof or, you know, let's go hiking or whatever, but the dad who actually participates in appropriate discipline, who helps out with the homework, who takes an interest in the kids and really spends time with them. Charlie, over the years, excelled at this. And this is one of the things, he was a great dad. But one of the things that hurt me the most was if he disciplined out of anger. And that was a deal breaker for me. It just tore my heart and, again, broke trust. And so that's a huge one, but that whole interaction with the kids. You know, he spent a week this past week driving cross country with Caleb. So 2 years ago they did 90 all the way to Boston and then down the East Coast. And this year they did 101
San Diego,
down to San Diego.
Highway 10.
And then Highway 10 to Florida. So now they've done a square around the U.S. But nothing could make me happier than the fact that he was willing to take 7 days and spend it with our youngest son.
Yeah, and it was 7 days I didn't have. Just like you guys, you're really busy. You got all kinds of things in the fire. You got all kinds of things going on, and there's no way you can find 7 days. But one of the things that spoke to me as I was trying to make this decision was how much you hear from retired people. Hey, what would you have done differently? Or people on their deathbed, what would you have done differently with your life? Maybe very successful in their business world. And they almost inevitably say, I would have spent more time with my family. Less time at work, taking off those days. When Sandy sees that in me, when your
it's
wife
huge.
Sees that in you, there, those are her cubs, right? She's mama bear.
Babies.
And when she sees somebody building up those little lives, pouring in those little, reading to them at night in bed, man, you talk about her heart just exploding for love for you. It fills her tank up so huge. And when she sees you ignoring them, when she sees you abdicating your responsibility, when she sees you doing those things, it is just like a drain.
Yeah, that was something that Charlie did so well, is he took over bedtime routine. He knew I was tired. And then I worked evening shift for a long time, so he kind of had to take that on. But then he kept at it even when I went back to day shift. And so he just took on that bedtime ritual. And that was a great thing.
Let me read you two scriptures. Children are a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
They're a gift, dads. See them as a blessing. See them as a gift. Don't see them as a burden. Pour into them, and they will bless you more than anything else. I tell you that 2 years ago we did that trip. The difference that Kaylee and I had on this trip, the maturity that I've watched him go through, the times of bonding, phenomenal. He's just a wonderful young man. And then Proverbs 29 says, discipline your children. Dads, get engaged. Oh, I'll let mom take care of that. Let mom take. No, discipline your children, and they'll give you peace. Are your children a delight to your soul? Are they bringing peace to your heart? If not, you might check on how you're disciplining, if at all. All right, action item. Take your kids out this week. Play with them. Take them to Mod Pizza. Take them to dinner. Take them to the park. Do something with them where you're going, hey, read to them at night. And one time, now watch what it does. They're going to go, Dad, mm-hmm. Where's my real dad? Who are you, right? And they'll go, Dad, thanks. That was the best time I've ever had. Mm-hmm. Dad, that was so great that we went to Mod Pizza together. Dad, you read that book. Can you read it again? Read it again? Read it again? Right. All right, number five.
Affection.
Affection. We put this last, but on most women's list, this is number one, right? Affection, where they are feeling loved. They're feeling cherished. They're feeling like they're the most valuable person in the world to you. Where they see that, oh, you mean something more to them than a sex object, where you're holding their hand not to get something, but just because you want to be with them, where you go to the mall with them.
So in our relationship, he's the shopper and I'm not, just to clarify.
She won't go to Cabela's with me, but when you go to the mall with her, right, and you're there, and yes, and she goes, wow, he wants to be with me.
Right. For him, it was running with me.
Yeah. Yeah, running was a great opportunity together. It was fun. I was not a runner, and she has been a runner her whole life. And she would go, oh, please go running, please go. I go, okay, and we'd do a teaching like this right here, something where I should be a better husband. So I'd go running. I could just barely make it a mile. I'd be like sucking air like crazy. And we'd get to that mile. She goes, just a mile. Okay, we've done the mile. She goes, hey, if you go with me 2 miles, I'll have sex with you. And I would muscle up, man. I would just jump in and I would go. And by the time that 2 miles is over, I'd be too tired. So she won both ways. 1 Peter 1. You were cleansed.
See, that wasn't even a joke. It wasn't even in your notes, and you got more laughter than your jokes.
You were cleansed from your sins when you obeyed the truth. Man, when you obey the truth, watch what happens. The ugliness in your marriage begins to dissipate. So now you must show your love to each other. Wow, show your love to each other. Love each other deeply with all your heart. Man, how does that show? When she knows I love her with all my heart, she goes, wow, he loves me. He loves me. He's for me.
But to do that, he has had to learn what love is. How I
define
love.
Yeah, like when
love,
we were dating.
How I define affection.
Sure. One wife says to her husband, says, our neighbor always kisses his wife before he leaves for work. Why don't you do that? And he looks at her and he says, well, I really don't know her that well.
See?
Acts of kindness, acts of tenderness, things that she needs, you know. The five love languages, have you done any studies on that? Sandy's love language is not groping. It's mine. Sandy's love language is acts of kindness, acts of service. And if she has asked me, hey, Charlie, the faucet's dripping in the kitchen. Could you fix that drippy faucet? And I can do it. I said, yeah, I'll get to it. Hey, do you mind fixing that? Yeah, I'll get to it. And, hey, the faucet's still dripping. I know. I'm going to get it. And I just put it off. Because to me, it's like the paper's on the floor. No big deal, right? To her, it is a dripping faucet. And so then I come up to her and you know, I'm kind of meeting my love language. I put my arms around her and give her a nice little hug and tell her, hey. And over my shoulder, she's watching the faucet. And I'm telling her how much I love you. You're so important to me. And she's watching the faucet drip, 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 drip. I don't love her. She's not important to me. She don't care about her. Right? Right? So all this stuff, she's going, hey. But if I'm going to show her love, I'm going to show her affection, I'm going to meet her needs. Let me give you one last action item. Two more. Action items, some homework. Ask her what her love language is, if you don't know. Ask her. And if you do know, ask her again. Hey, what's your love language?
And there's little tests you can do on that.
Yeah. Now some homework. I want you to take this list to your wives, guys. Your significant other. Say, will you pick two of them that you would like me to work on this week? pick two. I'm going to put them at the top of the list. I can't maybe do all five, but if you'll give me two that I can work on this week, it'd be great. And you watch what it does to your relationship. Any of you ever eat a Happy Meal? Growing up, you got a Happy Meal. You love to go to McDonald's, get Happy Meals. Some of you, yeah. You go to, what's the big deal about the Happy Meal? The toy, right? The prize inside there. And you get that Happy Meal, like, whoa. It's like marriage. What's the big deal about, oh, it's the prize. It's the toy. This is going to be great. And then you got some fries in there. You got a burger in there. You got a little orange drink, which they don't have anymore. But, you know, you put the toy, and the toy is kind of done. So you put it over here. Now you're checking out the fries, and you're drinking this drink. Pretty soon, your drink is gone, and all the fries are gone. Toy sitting over here. What do you do with what's left with your Happy Meal when you're all done with it?
Throw it away.
You throw it away. I watch marriages all the time. Starts off with all this excitement. Wow, it's going to be the toy, going to be the toy. But how many of you know the dopamine wears off, the excitement wears off, and things begin to... And now it becomes, hey, what can you do for me? Hey, when are you going to meet my needs? Hey, how come you're not doing this for me? Begin to suck the life out of the other person, suck them down until finally there's nothing down there at the bottom, and there's nothing in there, and there's no more fries in the box. And we say, well, you don't do anything for me anymore. Just like a Happy Meal. We throw it away. And what started out to be a happy becomes throwaway marriages all the time. Guys, if you're in the spot where you see your marriage not being where you want it to be, this is an opportunity for engage with God. Bible says, what would it matter if you gain the whole world but you lose your marriage, lose your own soul? Who cares? We don't have the kind of relationship, and God is here for you.